Have you ever looked into the night sky and wondered, are we alone? We've learned so much about the world and our universe, and yet we realize there are so many mysteries yet unsolved. If you are interested in the unexplained and mysterious in our world, then join us in The Night Search, a forum for discussion and exploration of the world just beyond our reach. And now, your host for Night Search, Eddie Middleton.
Okay, we're on board here. Augie, introduce our guest tonight.
Okay. Yeah, this is Augie, and I'm the co-host tonight with Eddie Middleton as the host. And tonight, our guest is Pat Fresconia. I hope I do not butcher his name here. And he is a Juris Doctorate from Mississippi College School of Law. For many years, he has spent his time defending people against abuses by banks, government, debt collectors, credit card companies, and so on. In 2011, our guest organized a UFO conference in Mississippi, where he met John Burroughs and Jim Peniston. The story about these two gentlemen is what we are going to talk about tonight. They were at the Randlesham Forest incident in England when a UFO landed there.
1980. Say again? I said that was 1980.
Oh, 1980. Okay, I did not understand. Yeah. All right. From there on, they ended up with some severe health problems. The government ignored and denied their help, their cry for help, and the radiation poisoning and the rest of the health problems they had was pretty severe, but the government ignored them. And that's where Pat got involved, and he was able to force the government to change their ways, so now they do have some help. Pat was also involved in contributions to the book Encounter in Randlesham Forest. He also participated in the citizens' hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club. And he's still fighting to find out what really happened at Randlesham Forest. And with no more ado, I am now give you Pat Fresconia. Pat, are you with us?
He needs to press 1 to get in the host queue.
Yes.
The Blog Talk used to always say, if you want to speak to the host, press 1 to get in the queue, and that they don't give that direction anymore. So we have to remember to remind our guests when they if they call in to press 1 to get in the host queue.
Yeah. I talked to Pat earlier, and he said he was going to call in, so I would presume that that is what he will do. I will go offline just a little bit here, and I will call Pat, and then we will see possibly what happened. Just stay with us,
okay.
Folks. We
okay.
are still
okay.
going to do this, so hang on.
This is a major coup he has accomplished in actually suing the government and winning the case, so they have to pay for John Burroughs' medical bills, which for like 10 years, I guess it was, they did not even own up to that he was subjected to some kind of radiation poisoning in the forest when he actually touched a landed UFO. And I think at even one point they denied he was even in the Air Force. But now they've had to finally fess up and admit he was subjected to some kind of unknown source of radiation, and they're going to pay all his medical bills. So this is tantamount to admission on their part that UFOs are real. So, I mean, this is unprecedented to get the government to admit to something like this. So he is definitely a hero, and we're going to hear the whole story tonight, how he managed to succeed in getting them to pay for his medical bills. That's John Burroughs. Okay, he'll be coming on shortly.
Okay.
So, anyway, we just have to tolerate a little bit of dead air, which is kind of, you know, bad for radio, talk radio, but...
9142.
Okay.
Correct.
He's talking to him now, and he's going to be calling in. So be patient, folks. We've got a great show about to transpire here.
Yeah, that's probably how it was. I'm sorry, Josh. But if you can call in, that would be wonderful. Otherwise, I can try to convey...
Be ready to call in after the half-hour mark. We'll open up the lines for callers. So be ready to call in at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. Okay, Augie, are you there? Okay, I think we're getting to start now.
Yeah, this is Argy again, and Pat is going to call in any second here now, so he will be with us very shortly. I think we had a misunderstanding. He thought we were going to call him, and we thought he was going to call us, and I think I probably dropped the ball on that one. That's very possible.
Okay.
Hey,
well,
this is live radio, folks. This is what we get.
I know, that's what... We may fumble around a little bit, but we do get some good guests, and we got some powerful information tonight, for sure.
Yeah, this is going to be a unique one because of, first of all, who he is, and for the second, what he's been involved with. And he's one of the very few people that is, he's in a... very structured in their mind, and they don't fly off on... you know, paranormal things usually, but this guy, he's been doing the investigation and he's finding out some things that he's going to talk about tonight. It's going to be very interesting.
Okay. He should be in the host queue by now.
Yeah.
I'm here.
All right. Well, I'm going to let... we've done all our introduction already, so we're just going to start in. I'm going to... Well, Augie was going to co-host with me tonight, and I'm going to let him ask the first question.
Okay, yeah, just Pat, when you get in the queue there, dial 1, and you will be in the queue with us.
Okay.
He's there now. Okay.
Are you with us, Pat?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, Pat, this is wonderful. I have to apologize, Pat. I think I'm the one that dropped the ball on this one, and because I seem to remember that we were supposed to call you and it didn't happen. I'm very sorry.
No problem. No problem at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't hear my introduction either, probably, so I told them a little bit about you, what you had been involved with, and both the Disclosure Project and the book that you had part of, and I talked a little bit about Mr. Burroughs, and I think from there on, this is such a large concept that, gosh, I don't know where we would start with it, but maybe you could start out maybe explaining a little bit on the background.
Certainly. It was about 4 years ago in 2011 that I first met John Burroughs. And he had asked me at that time if I would be willing to assist him and Jim Peniston, who were both principals, of course, in the Rendlesham Forest incident back in 1980 in England, in getting their medical records. As time would go on, John's case was particularly stubborn, and we had a lot of difficulty getting any kind of assistance. We first enlisted the help of Senator John Kyle, who has since retired from Arizona, and then would move on to Senator John McCain after John Kyle had retired. And it would not be until January of this year that we were finally able to get the VA to award John Burroughs full disability for injuries that he received in the forest in December of 1980. So it's been almost a full four-year effort to get that to happen. And along the way, there were a lot of obstacles that were thrown in the way, such as his DD-214 form, which shows the dates of service of a service member. They were showing that he wasn't even in the military in 1980, but didn't come in until 82. There were a lot of things that had to be overcome along the way to finally get to that point.
That appears to me, then, that they were trying to cover for themselves so that if they misrepresented the records that way, maybe they were trying to keep him on the outside of this information, do you think?
Oh, without question. In the earliest days of this, there was some question as to whether it was just negligence on the part of, the Veterans Administration or Department of Defense or whomever you want to assign the guilt to, if you will, of not doing something, left hand not knowing what the right hand was doing. But that sort of pattern just kept going and going and going. And you finally get to the point you realize, well, there can't be this much incompetence even in one part of the government. And you realize that, no, this is by design. Somebody's trying to keep us out of something. So when they finally did award the full disability in showing what documents were considered in making that evaluation determination, they listed part of the Condon report, which mentions the Rendlesham incident and how folks may have been injured therefrom.
Could we then maybe say that the medical establishment within the military, they knew that this incident was real, and that's why they falsified it? If it was just something that people had made up or was not real, do you think they would have been that serious about it then?
Just made up? No, no. I mean, certainly there has been some classified papers that have been released, such as the one I just mentioned, the UK document. That was unclassified, I think, in 2006, that mentions the possibility of harmful effects at Rendlesham Forest by those observers, which include John Burroughs. And the VA, and then, using those documents as part of those they considered in making that determination, clearly linked what happened to Mr. Burroughs to those documents, at least in part. And considering the fact that there's never been an official government, U.S. government, certainly confirmation that something happened out there, this is not just confirmation of that, but that somebody could be injured and, in fact, was by something out there.
How do they actually describe the nature of the injuries that when they admit that he was injured and worthy of full disability? How do they actually describe the nature of his injuries?
Well, I don't want to go into too much because that gets into John's personal medical business. However, what we have publicly disclosed and that which is important for purposes here, meaning what the VA did and what they were recognizing by giving it the full disability, was the damage to his heart. And this is something that occurred within a couple of weeks or so after the incident. I can't remember the exact time, but it was a short period after. This is a 18, 19-year-old man that goes into the military in 1979. And then within weeks of the incident in 1980, he suddenly has developed a heart problem. And that would follow him through life and get to a point by 2013 that he was close to death. So they linked it to that specific malady.
And do they say more about the cause of the injury other than just some unknown something?
No, but there has been at least one commentator on the Above Top Secret website, Dr. Christopher Green, Wayne State Medical School, who posted something there about a month and a half ago. He goes into great medical detail as to what happened and why. And so there's certainly medical literature out there, at least in this case, a physician who's familiar with this case because he helped in assessing John and kind of putting a face to the, you know, to what happened as far as physically.
John, isn't he the one that actually touched the object, the UFO that was landed there?
No, that was Jim Peniston. Jim Peniston.
Okay. Now, John, how close was he to the object?
John got within, of course, 100 meters. He was of that range, but that's kind of a standard range in which some people talk about as far as proximity to these kinds of craft and injuries resulting as a result. But he was far closer than that. He doesn't remember exactly how close he got. Certainly not like Jim did. Jim got right up to it and, as I said, touched it.
Did they have the same kind of medical problems?
No. And just because, you know, people will, just like with any other kind of radiation, they can, you know, some people might develop a cancer in the skin, some might develop a cancer inside, you know, underneath. I mean, it varies. So Jim's got a different situation completely from John.
Mm-hmm.
John was affected by his heart.
Yeah. I'm just curious, did they say what shape it had or what it looked like?
The craft in the forest.
Yeah.
You're speaking of, now that was basically a triangular shape, and don't hold me to the exact dimensions, but roughly 8-9 feet by maybe 6 feet wide and 3-4 feet tall.
Hmm.
Now, I guess John was like bathed in some kind of light that was emanating from this craft, right?
Right. It basically, when it was more or less powering up, is the best way I think I can put it, it became a very brilliant white light, a blinding white light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if I may say something, gentlemen, I would like to. I'm an attorney, and I have been for almost 25 years. I've never been involved in this sort of thing before I met John Burroughs. And
yeah.
I'm not going to say I was a skeptic before I got involved, but the story, although it seems fanciful in some way, it also immediately struck me as an unusual case of what could be a very credible incident because of who the observers were, who the participants were. And I can tell you without any doubt, after having known those two gentlemen, Peniston and Burroughs, for 4 years now and dealt extensively with them, been with them in a variety of settings and different people and different situations, talking to them, there's no question that they encountered what they say they encountered in that forest. And of course, they're not the only two that we know of. You know, there were about approximately 50 or so people involved in the incident the first night, not all of whom went out into the forest, of course, but others that witnessed the lights over the forest and whatnot, not to mention then the subsequent night when Colonel Halt was involved and made his famous audio tape. So if anybody questions whether it happened, they don't need to. It happened. It's only a matter of whose was that craft? Where did it come from?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's a good question, because we know the federal governments of both England and the United States have been experimenting with these kinds of crafts for decades. And then again, there are also first-hand knowledge in crashed flying saucers that appears to have non-terrestrial technology, so it's hard to say what it is.
Well, I have my own opinions about that after, like I said, being involved with these two gentlemen for so long. And I can honestly say that if it was terrestrial born technology, let's put it that way, it's ours, that kind of makes me more uncomfortable than if it was somebody else's from outside. because that means we've had capabilities going all the way back to 1980 that 35 years later the general public doesn't even know we have. And you can only imagine how advanced they are beyond the 1980 technology.
Yeah. Of course, if it was ours, then the question would be, why in the world would they be, having it land out there and expose these military people to that kind of radiation? I mean, what could in the world could be their purpose, you know?
And understand that when we speak of radiation here, we're not talking, of course, just so folks understand, atomic bomb radiation. We're talking about certain kinds of, just like visual light, is radiation, radio waves, etc. But these craft are operating in the manner that they do, and it's kind of a misnomer to call it propulsion because that's not exactly what it is. It's, in a sense, propulsion. But when they are operating, meaning when they are able, when they are maneuvering through space, whether it's space inside of a forest or above it or beyond, that requires a certain energy wavelength, we'll call it. And that is what was the exposure to these gentlemen and affected John's heart.
So I guess we just have to say it's an unknown energy that he was exposed to that caused his health problems.
Well, it's a certain wavelength, we can just say, that maybe we're familiar with, but we're just not so understanding of how that particular wavelength can cause a craft to do what it does.
Now, this has been covered up. There's so many witnesses to actually what happened over there, and it's been covered up so thoroughly and for so long. What do you think, why are they actually covering up? And not just there, but on a global scale. Why do you think they're actually covering this up so well that they've done over the decades?
Well, of course, I think there are two lines of thought on that. One, assuming it is all terrestrial technology, terrestrial, born technology, then there's obviously an arms race going on right now, and has been going on, competing technologies, between countries, I assume, would be the reason. Of course, the sub-reason to that might be that they just don't want the public to know what capabilities governments have. That's another possibility. Of course, the other line of thought is, it's non-terrestrial, and something that I, have come to understand as well, it may be non-terrestrial technology, even in the forest of Rendlesham in 1980, but it was us having recreated or mimicking, if you will, having what we've gleaned from non-terrestrial technology. In other words, it was our craft, but we were operating something that we built using somebody else's know-how. So I don't know exactly which one it is. I have my suspicion. I tend to believe that if it was terrestrial, 35 years later after Rendlesham, it would have finally been at an air show somewhere that we would have all seen or heard of. But it's not. And so that makes me think it's something much, much different. Something much different.
Yeah, I know Linda Howe had speculated that it might actually be, I know how far out this sounds, time travelers.
I don't think that's far out. I mean, I in some ways I would put that in the non-terrestrial, category. I think if you're talking about maneuvering a craft in the manner that these apparently can do, then maneuvering not just through space but time, in a sense, is also something you have to contemplate. So then it just gets back to whose is it? Is it ours from the future or someone else's? But I think that's a viable theory. Indeed.
I know people just need to read the whole line of speculation there that I think Linda Howe still has it available on her website, earthfiles.com. They could read more about that. Did he have any missing time, you think, during this exposure?
Well, both Jim Tennyson and John Burroughs reports vary, of course, as they always do when you're dealing with personal accounts of anything, particularly something that's excitingly charged as that. But they were in the forest in the vicinity of the craft, according to the outside observers, those that did not approach it, for approximately 45 minutes. For John and Jim, they did not perceive it to be that long. And in fact, both gentlemen have told me, and have said publicly as well, that as they got within a certain proximity to the craft, at this point I'm going to call it, say, about 10 meters. It might have been a little bit more. They felt static electricity in the air. And Jim Peniston told me once something that I've never forgotten. He said it was like things were kind of in slow motion almost. Everything just seemed to slow down, he said, as we got closer to it. And so to me, that kind of indicates some kind of temporal distortion going on, and I'm not a physicist, so don't ask me to give you a formula for that,
right.
But that's just kind of a layperson's, you know, take on it.
Yeah, I know that's so, typical of a lot of these very close encounters, some kind of time distortion. And I've also heard many times, like, reference to how time, things slow down when they get very close to these things.
That makes perfect sense, actually, because if you have extreme gravity, that will happen.
Yes, that's right.
And when you bend space, then you are creating that extremely high gravity.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, another thing I'm curious about, I've read recently that the Ministry of Defense is still refusing to release some classified documents. Do you know the latest story on that?
John Burroughs, through his own initiative, I had done quite a bit of Freedom of Information Act requests early on after I met John, but for the first year and a half, which did not really bear much fruit other than just a few things here and there, but nothing major. What we did find out subsequently, this is due to John's efforts on his own, he was trying to get the British government through their through the FOIA analog that they have to release any documents that they might happen to have. And in doing so, it's a great example of, you know, flipping over a rock, you never know what you might find. When he did that, he found out through their own admission, through that process, that they had 18 files. When previously they've said for years now that they've released everything that they had on Rendlesham, and suddenly all of a sudden they have 18 more files. Now, that has been delayed, supposedly for administrative reasons, which you can only imagine include redacting or whatever they're doing. Depends on what conspiracy theory you might adopt in that regard as to why it's taking so long. I've heard, the last I heard was maybe by the end of this year or maybe by the end of 2016. Bottom line is they've admitted they have 18 more, but they have not yet released. And we don't know what's in them.
So I want you to speculate a little bit here with us. What are the implications of this success you've had here in getting them to, you know, admit he's worthy of full disability because of the injuries there in the forest with some unknown object? Well, where can this go from here now? Maybe you've really unleashed something that's going to really bring about more disclosure.
Well, I mean, one would certainly think and at least hope so. Fortunately, we still live in a free enough country where we have programs like this, the show that you're doing, Eddie and Augie, to get this kind of thing out. We've had a little mainstream media attention, Sarasota Herald Tribune being one, and of course we've had some attention by British papers about what's happened, meaning that John Burroughs was given full disability for his encounter in the forest in England to an unknown craft. It's unfortunate there hasn't been wider understanding by media outlets of what this means, because without question, John's not the only one. There are others out there. that have been affected in some way by craft that we none of us may ever even know, except for the very few that were involved in those particular events.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a shame. It's also a shame that it took so long just to get this help for John. So, for just one veteran.
Have you been invited on other major media outlets like Coast to Coast?
I've not been invited on since we made this announcement in Phoenix in February. However, Linda Moulton Howe has done extensive work on this in getting it out through Coast. So although I have not been on myself to talk about it, the information has come out through her mainly and Earth Files and so forth.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, they ought to invite you to be on Good Morning America or something like that. That would be great.
Well,
you see anything like that happening, a Larry King show or something?
Well, I think if Larry King was still around, I might be making an appearance, you know. But it's sad because it's almost like, and it's not probably almost like, it probably is like, that, and this to me, this is one of the greatest single pieces of evidence, if you want to call it that, that there has been a deliberate effort to marginalize the UFO phenomena. And that is, even with something like this, which has some really clean facts and conclusion, meaning the VA's decision and what they cited as their reasons, and you still can't get mainstream media to cover it. It's as if it's been made so silly, it's been made to be so not to be given any kind of credibility that everybody's just asleep at the wheel and doesn't even pay attention to it. And it's really sad because it really says to me whatever disinformation campaign under whatever project name it was, it did a really good job. Did a really good job, and except for the few, again, shows like yours that are out there that are willing to talk about it, to talk about the obvious in this case. So,
I think disclosure is about to happen right now. I don't expect it to be very long before it will be, first of all, commonly known, and for the second, acknowledged by at least several governments, because I know it already has started. The Prime Minister of Russia was, after a TV show, he admitted on camera to the interviewer that, yes, the aliens are here, and he was
I
asked
saw that.
How many they are. And he said, yes, we can't say how many they are because the panic will start. So he admitted it. You've probably seen that.
Well, I hope you don't have any credit card companies or your sponsors, but I'll say this, advertisers. But let me say this. The way I put it to people is if credit card companies can charge you the outrageous interest they do and penalize you every time you're an hour late paying or whatever, they can literally take that money right out of your bank account and you put up with it and keep using them, then how difficult is it really to tell everybody there's no such thing as aliens visiting us?
Yeah.
You know, if the different interests in this country can take money away from you like they do, and you put up with it and just act like it's normal, then is it really that difficult to believe that people could have been convinced something else is normal? And that is that we're not being visited when we really are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you pay more attention to your money, I hope, than anything else. So I think the problem that whoever these parties or interests are in the government have now is undoing what they did so well, if, in fact, they want to undo it. And I hope Augie's right about that.
Yeah, they have
I think
to
the
undo
bigger
it
question
so they can
is,
get away. Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's another question here is, what else have they made silly or pulled the wool over the eyes of everybody about? What else? May find out that the alien topic is just one of many.
Yeah.
So.
That makes sense. And they have to, like you said, they have to undo it in such a way that they can get away with it without enraging the public.
And that's sage that you bring that up in the way you did, because that's what some people have suggested with John's disability award, is that that is not the way they're going to do it. It's one of many ways that they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And you do it slowly in ways like that. And over time, it becomes not, there was a bright line moment when they said, hey, by the way, we want to make an announcement. It's just over time, maybe over generations worth or what have you, we'll just wake up one day and say, oh, yeah, well, we've kind of always known that, hadn't we, that we're being visited? It was never a bright line moment. So I would think that might be the way they do it.
Yeah, and you're probably familiar with the Rockefeller Initiative, where you know, the head of the Rockefeller clan suggested to Congress that the alien issue need not be covered up anymore, so do away with it. You know, and I think that's probably one of the things that might urge them also to go forward with some type of slow disclosure.
I think so, and you know, I think the reason, I think there are probably two reasons. Disclosure may be coming about, whether it's a kind of a slow process or quick, either one. One is whatever, of course, the Cold War is over, we hope, it's not coming back, but that sort of competition between, you know, potentially warring factions on the planet is not a problem in that way anymore. But I tend to think that the more likely reason is that whatever technology could be gleaned and then fed into through corporate America or whatever companies around the world to make a profit, they've pretty much done all they can do. They don't know how to unravel the rest of it. So, you know, at this point, it's already been you know, the lucrativeness of it.
Let me run something up the flagpole with you and see if you kind of agree with me. I think there's a twofold reason for the cover-up. One of them is, of course, security of the country, for one thing. And then the second one, the oil industry and the powers behind the establishment that makes the profits from all the bastardization and the burning of oil and the coal industry and the industrial powers. I think they're holding it back to, what do you think?
I think that's a plausible conclusion you could come to. I mean, we don't know who all has fingers in this deal that's pushing down on it, keeping it from coming out. It would certainly make sense that one of the most powerful lobbies on the planet, which is the energy lobby, would probably have some fingers, if not several hands, in that deal. So I think that would probably be a safe assumption.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a long time. I've been digging around in the patent bureau. On the first patent that I find that show how to burn water in your car instead of gasoline dates back to 1916. So, yeah, they've been at it for a while.
Well, and another good example of that, not quite as good as that one that you're mentioning, but the city of Los Angeles, for example, used to have a great streetcar system. And the residents seemed to be quite happy with it until the automobile and oil industries wanted them to give that up for driving cars around. So it's created quite a mess.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ways.
Yeah, we're just past the top of the hour, about 10 minutes past. I want to open up the lines if anyone would like to call with a question or comment. Call us at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. We welcome any of our listeners who would like to call in. Would you like to give out like a website address or a contact information, Pat?
Certainly, I'll give you an email address, if I may, is what I prefer the most. If anybody, you know, knows a veteran or someone that needs help, or and the vast majority, this help is just not possible with the records or trying to do anything. But there's every now and then there's somebody that there might be something we can do for, and you know, help them out in some way. And that is Pat Frasconia at frascolaw.com, PatFrascoGNA@FrascoLaw.com.
Okay. Who knows who might come out, you know, with the woodwork with add some more information to the story. I know Linda Howe is doing an excellent job of keeping abreast of any new developments with that. I have to definitely commend her for the kind of great investigative work she does there. Do you know of any documentaries maybe that are going to be produced about this?
Nothing. I mean, I can't say anything specifically since the announcement was made about this back in February. However, we have been contacted by several radio programs, even one film crew over here from Copenhagen, I believe it is. It's in the country right now, doing various, you know, UFO related type of film works and so forth, but nothing specifically yet, nothing that I'd call it a really major production effort that's come forth. Not yet, at least.
Yeah. There's no question. This you've dropped a bombshell here with this breaking news story that it's got to finally, you know, have some far-reaching, I think, effects. It just takes a little time maybe for the people to realize what you know, the implications of this, you know, what you've accomplished.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah, you have actually created precedents here. Other people can use
well,
it.
Well, it is. I mean, in my business, a law, this would constitute precedents.
Yeah. Other
no,
people can
I mean,
go in and use this when they refer to this case and say, hey, this is same thing in a different fashion happened to me, and then they go and refer your case. It's no difference. It's just a different situation, and they could probably apply it to himself so they can go in the same door.
Well, I have been contacted by a few folks just like that you're describing, that have had.
Yeah, we got a caller here. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Bridget. How are you doing?
Good.
Hi, Bridget.
Good.
Hi. I did have a question. You guys were talking about if the craft that they saw in the forest, if it's a possibility that if it was terrestrial or if it was, of course, non-terrestrial. Now, my question is, and this is from reading information about the case itself. If it was terrestrial, is there a way that Jim Peniston would have gotten those binary codes? And did receiving those codes, was he medically injured by that?
I don't believe he was medically injured by the codes, or if he was, there hasn't been an established link to that. If it was terrestrial, would there have been such a download, if you will, that I don't know. I tend to think not. Now, Jim has come under a lot of fire about his binary code allegation. I know Jim quite well, and I believe him completely. Just like John, there's been a lot of things that they've kept to themselves over the years after this. And I tend to think that such a binary download to someone would probably not be something of ours. But then again, you know, who can say for sure?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, any other callers, we're welcome. You call now if you would like to call in at 347-838-9142. Augie mentioned that you had contributed to a book about the Rendlesham incident. Is that book the one entitled Left at Eastgate?
That's Peter Robbins' book with Larry Warren. That's entirely different. Now, our book was Encounter in Rendlesham Forest. The principal authors being Nick Pope, Jim Pennison, and John Burroughs. I contributed a chapter with Nick in which I detailed the folio work that we did, or that I did, and how I met John and Jim and that story.
Yeah, you were part of the Disclosure Project at the Press Club, too, weren't you?
Yeah, Steve Bassett's production there, that project, yes, I was. And we that was in April of 2013. Hard to believe it's been 2 years ago. I was on the panel with Jim Pennison, John Burns, and Nick Pope, and we presented the Rendlesham case. Now, at that time, 2013, we were still very much in the hunt for and the struggle to get the medical records for both gentlemen, Pennison and Burroughs, and had very limited, well, no success, and we're still doing some of the FOIA, I think the last FOIA request. And that was also the forum in which we announced that we were preparing to file a federal complaint or lawsuit, rather, against the United States government for those records that ultimately we didn't have to file because they did what we were trying to get them to do all along. It was a very productive conference there.
Yeah. We got some more callers. Let's take a caller.
This is Ron. Am I on the air?
You're on the air,
yes,
sir.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I called in very late, only about 4 minutes ago, and so I'm behind the curve on the information, but it's my understanding someone was injured at the Rendlesham Forest event. May I know, was it a disease he contracted, or did he have some form of burn?
Well, I don't want to speak about the speaking of the two principal, I call them principal witnesses, only because of the, I'm basing that on their proximity, that'd be Jim Pennison and John Burroughs. And John Burroughs was injured. He had several problems that developed from his gums and his mouth turning white and staying that way for a time. But the primary injury that most thing that happened to him, obviously, was his heart damage, the damage to his heart. And it was severe enough, as I'd said earlier in the program, it nearly cost him his life a couple of years ago before he got the surgery he needed to correct that. And there was obviously a link between what had happened in the forest and that, because the time frame was so short for when he'd just come into the Air Force, had a complete physical, had no heart problems whatsoever as a late teen. Teenage man, and then right after the incident, he had the problems that he did.
The reason I ask, and I'll be brief, was that something over a decade ago, I experienced a burn from a very high-frequency device, several hundred thousand cycles per second, and it caused localized injuries in my body. On the skin, it was like a burn, many discolorations, but it also did some organ damage. And so I wanted to mention that because if this device is from an extremely distant place or an extremely distant time, it would probably have modulation of frequency involved, and anybody coming too close to it would experience damage that would be similar to being all the way through like a microwave oven.
Mm-hmm. Was yours radar related by chance?
No, it was a out-of-tune frequency device invented by Royal Raymond Rife about 70 years ago, and it was never meant to be run quite at the frequencies that I was using it at. I was using it at...
Is this a military application or something?
Pardon?
Is this a military application or something you're talking about?
No, it was a medical device. If you touch it to a person's skin, it actually makes their hand raise in the air, their cheek move around, things like that. It overrides the neurology of the body, with high frequency electronic signals, and it shakes diseases to pieces. Basically, the cellular structure of any disease in the body is actually disrupted by these high frequencies. When I was having it tested on me, it was running at about 3 times higher than anybody had ever had it before because the device was defective. It was running at too high a frequency. So it almost killed me that night. I had severe burns on many parts of my body the next morning.
Were these appendages, like your limbs, or are you talking about your torso was involved? Or
arms, legs, torso, everything but my head and hands and feet. It took about 6 years for the effects to stop going wild on me on a regular basis. It also did some kind of damage to the insides, but that was indeterminate since you can't really feel pain on your organs. You just know you don't feel right some days. But the skin lesions would appear at random. And so the reason I say that, since I'm the only person in the world who's apparently ever had this strange effect, I know what to expect if someone's coming near an extremely high-frequency device that might be modulating through time or space. It would burn the person.
I guess it's surprising that there weren't some fatalities connected with this encounter in Rendlesham Forest.
None that we are aware of. No, not from that. But I think I have reason to believe there have been fatalities around the globe.
I know in remote areas of Brazil, definitely there have been fatalities that Bob Pratt documented, even a book, one of the most interesting UFO books I ever read called UFO Danger. So that's really documented. So I guess Burroughs really is fortunate, too, that he hadn't succumbed to that, you know, and he's going to survive.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's something that I've come to understand, too, from various people I've been in contact with in the know about this, and that is that not everybody is affected the same way. And there is possibly, you know, research of some kind going on to find out just which humans or what kinds of people genetically, what have you, are the best operators of this equipment. So if we want to operate equipment that we have we've gotten from somewhere else, then we got to have people that can withstand the operation of it. Kind of similar to a high altitude test pilot or something, you know, in a way. So some people can withstand it. Also explains why some injuries are different. So.
You know, we got a couple of other callers in the queue, so let's go ahead and take another caller.
Yeah, hello, caller. Are you with us?
Well, we did have a couple of callers in the queue.
Maybe they're the bashful type.
Yeah. Anyway, we're about 5 minutes left in the show here.
Yeah. Where are you going from here now, Pat? Are you open for other people to take on their cases, or are you just going to stay with this one and carry it through all the way?
Well, we're more or less all the way through with John. John, other than some cleanup work here, trying to get the files that we were talking about earlier from the UK and anything that would further define precisely what it was in the forest. We know it was. We just don't know exactly what. Anything like that, we certainly are continuing to do. And as I've mentioned before, I'm always looking for that one veteran's case that comes around every so often, just as rare as John's, that needs somebody to help, because it's certainly not about money, I can tell you that. Not that at all. It's about doing something that I feel is absolutely worthwhile, not just for the person or the victim, if you will, involved, but well beyond that. After nearly 25 years, John Burroughs' case is beyond a doubt the most satisfying thing I've ever been involved with.
Yeah.
And didn't make a dime off of it. But the result and And I'm not just talking about the VA's decision and what that means, the implications, but when I was out in Tucson in 2013 for him to get the surgery that he finally needed, that was probably the most satisfying part.
He's doing well now. His health is restored pretty much back to normal.
The best that, mankind can do with surgery to correct what God had created perfectly, sure. But given the fact that he was on the brink of dying in 2013, and this surgery, which by itself was difficult to finally get done, but once that was done, his life, obviously now, because it was exactly what had to be done, has been extended by what we hope will be to what, should be a normal lifespan.
Great, great. I have to ask one other question. In the process of pursuing this case and trying to get justice for this man, did you ever get any veiled threats from any sources or agencies, or did they warn you off?
No, probably just my wife was the only one that was telling me to quit spending so much time on it, But no, I can't say that. I mean, there has been contact with some of what you're alluding to, but not threatening contact.
Interesting. What about, have you got some kudos from some of your colleagues in the law profession?
Meaning exactly kudos, I understand, but what do you mean as far as
for your accomplishment? Have you been congratulated by other attorneys that know of the case?
Oh, you mean directed at me? I thought you meant at someone
else. No.
Well, this is not the kind of thing that most of my professional brethren follow in the first place. I would certainly be a rebel in that sense, coming out of law, being involved in something along these lines. So I would say, other than a few people that I've met across the country, such as at the UFO Congress that came forward that were also attorneys, No. This is not the kind of thing most of the folks that I know in that field would have much to say about.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to get you to speak at the University of Memphis Law School when you come to Memphis on the 16th. I'll be finding out tomorrow, I think, if the dean is going to think he'd like to have you speak there. I would think it would be of interest to students of law to hear about this case. Like you say, you have created quite a precedent here. So we sure appreciate you taking time to be on the show tonight. Look forward to meeting you in person. You come to Memphis on the 16th, and I think we're just about out of time.
I found out we're going to run a little over. So we have time for the question of Richard that is in the queue here and ready to go on the air with us. Richard, are you there?
Go ahead.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yes, I am. You have a question I had was that isn't it feasible that the government cover up on all this? I mean, because it's been documented throughout time that UFOs have been spotted, even though a majority of the people who spotted them never had any injuries because they weren't within proximity of it. They've just seen the objects flying or got close to it, but not as close as these gentlemen did. Isn't it feasible that the whole cover-up is just simply for the public, because the realization that there is somebody else out there besides us is too devastating for the human mind?